Good afternoon, Wrangell. You're listening to Talk on the Rock, your local live call-in show. The time is 1 p.m., and we have our guest, Steve Persunka, in the studio today, and he is Wrangell's mayor. So you can call in any time to ask a question or just say hi. That number is 874-2345. Steve, thank you for coming in today.
Thanks very much for having me, June.
Cool. Okay, so there's a lot that we could talk about, and there's a lot that we will talk about. Before we get into that, let's go over the basics. How long have you been on the assembly in some way?
I think it's 5 years now, and this is my second year as the mayor.
Yep. And, you know, while we're at it, you're involved in some other things. I'm thinking of SEPA. Give me a sense of how else you're involved with the city or the state in some way.
Sure. I'm involved with SEPA, with the board. I'm the board representative from Wrangell, the voting member, and then Lisa Von Bargen is the other representative on that board. And I've been on SEPA now, I think, for 4 years. As well, I volunteer on the fire department, just past my 20th year volunteering there, and I work with the search dogs, so that's really my involvement. And as far as other state things, I stay pretty busy just with being the mayor and representing the community at a state level.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think something that is interesting to me is we live in this small town where our elected officials are not, they don't have a salary. They have their jobs. You know, you take Drew, he's a full-time teacher and he coaches too for certain sports. But, you know, your situation is a little different and you can spend a little bit more time with the city. Just tell me, you know, I mean, you know, is this your full-time job basically?
Well, there's certainly busier times than other times, but I do spend a fair amount of time working at this. It's nice. We have a really excellent city manager and a fantastic clerk, and they really they carry the load. And then my job is to keep things organized and running during the meetings, and ensuring that we're getting good due process as we move along there. And representing the community sort of on the state level whenever possible and trying to elevate our needs as a community up to our legislators. But, yeah, it's we're lucky we have such excellent staff at the city. It makes the job of mayor a lot easier.
Yeah, and so, like you said, you are the one that's responsible for making sure that the meetings go the way they should. And I think the public, you know, even if they're not tuning into every meeting, they know those meetings happen. We produce story on those meetings. But you're meeting with city staff outside of those meetings. You're getting their input. You're giving them input. You know, what does a week look like for you when you're interacting with city staff?
Well, for me, my major interaction with the city staff is always through the clerk and through the city manager. Mm-hmm. And so Lisa and I have an opportunity. I try to check in with her at least once a day to see how things are going and if there's anything that we need to follow up on. I tend to write a lot of my own letters and that sort of thing. And then Lisa, they go to Lisa and she reworks them and makes sure that we're on track and aligned with the mission. So anything typically written, I write myself. So I work closely with her on that as well. And then moving forward with just general issues in the city, absolutely. I think all of this is a very active assembly, and all the assembly members work through Lisa on their various issues. You know, so if I've got an issue with potholes, I go in and discuss what the plans are for the potholes, or we have issues with the public safety building, we go in and discuss those. And basically at that point you're laying out your thoughts, and then Lisa takes those and puts them into a format for the meeting, because everybody has to have a say at the end of the day.
Okay, right on. Yep. So, you know, there's discussions before these meetings, and ultimately those come to the light of the entire assembly and the public, you know, through the public meetings. That's where the actions take place.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And okay, so Steve, I'm ready to get into it. So before we, you know, get into city business, let's look at state business. The legislative session is underway, and you did just return from Juneau. Maybe just tell people what you were doing up there.
Well, I was invited to come up along with other mayors from across the maritime communities through the Alaska Municipal League to do what's called a fly-in. And we spoke with legislators, particularly focusing on legislators from non-marine communities, about the issues with the Alaska ferry system. And I think each day that we were there, I probably had around 6 to 8 meetings with legislators. And then I also had an opportunity to testify in front of the Transportation Committee and give testimony there as well. And so we were divided up in teams and we went around, and I was with the mayor of Angoon, the city manager from Soldovia, and the mayor from Dutch Harbor and the mayor of Gustavus. So we kind of had diverse regional representation, and everybody had sort of a different take on the issues, but we went and just tried to convince legislators from other communities that maybe aren't impacted by the ferry, what the impacts are to the maritime communities.
Okay. And then tell me, you know, how did that end? What was the result of that?
Well, unfortunately, there was a veto of what we were hoping for, an override. And so now what we have asked for, as part of our pitch, we asked that if it didn't go through, that there'd be a fast-track supplemental to add some money back in, $5 million. But I just got to explain, the $5 million is crumbs. These are just tiny little crumbs on the table of the actual cost of the marine highway system. And so it was kind of a surreal experience, because you have a group of people that have no idea how the ferry impacts our lives. And it is our ability to move around. It is our ability to get goods and services to our communities. It's our ability to transport in tourists. And I just don't know if they were very sympathetic, but I don't know if at the end of the day, I think it left an impact, but at the end of the day, as they're looking at all of the money and the issues with the money, it's pretty easy to brush those crumbs away, and I think that's what's happened to us.
Yeah, I mean, legislators, their job is to represent their people, so, you know, it's like, you know, in my mind of how it works is your people need to outnumber their people.
Well, that's partially true. I actually took a little different approach to this issue than the other mayors and city managers. There was a lot of really hard stories to hear, you know, literally food shortages in some of the communities and running out of diapers and sharing diapers amongst neighbors. And one poor kid in Angoon had made state, first time ever. The community had a state runner and they were all excited, and the kid couldn't get out. The ferry broke down. And, you know, these are all, you know, really tough stories, and it's real people really hurting. But I took it from an approach of disaster response, totally different approach, that this is a part of our state's disaster response program. These ships the Kennecott's been designed specifically to be an emergency command station. It's designed to be able to offload equipment and supplies, even if there's no ferry ramp there. This is an integral part of our ability to respond to an emergency in the state. And we used the Alaska Marine Highway System during the Exxon Valdez oil spill and that effort. And so I really hammered at home that it's the responsibility of the state to be able to respond to emergencies, specifically with the cruise ship passengers, over 1 million a year plying the waters of Southeast Alaska, and the new mega ships that are coming that could literally drop off 6,000 people into a community in the event of a disaster. So we need to have the ferries in place to help respond to that. And we may need to look at some funding measures through the tourism and through industry to help ensure that we're able to respond to emergencies.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're saying that's the state's responsibility. I mean, it's also the Fed's responsibility with the Coast Guard. Yeah. Okay. Then that is interesting. It looks like we are getting a call. You know, I think with the ferries matter a lot to Southeast, and we've been hearing these really kind of horror stories from places like Angoon. But Wrangell is not in the same situation as Angoon. Really lay it out for me why this issue matters for us.
Well, it matters for us. So you're right. Angoon is these small Angoon, Gustavus, Pelican. A lot of these communities don't even have airports. So Angoon is getting an airport, but they don't have a runway. They have to use seaplanes. So if the weather's bad, they can't even get in. excuse me. But it matters to us for a couple of reasons. Aside from the disaster response, I believe that we're heading towards a perfect storm in terms of transportation of goods into the community. And we know that AML is going to be looking at removing the oversight that was put in place for the antitrust measures when they first took over Northlands. I am fearful that we could wind up with a sole provider of barge services into our community. And the Alaska State Ferry is the other method of getting goods into our community. And I've been encouraging legislators to think about how we can repurpose, reconfigure, and possibly maximize our ability to move containers and other things on the ferries to help offset that monopoly. So we've seen the cost of shipping go way up, and I am concerned at the end of the day if there's a monopoly, and I believe we're heading that way. We're going to want the ferry there. Also, transportation of fish. You know, it's our main mechanism to transport fresh halibut down south, and so I would really like to see us ensuring that that stays in place.
Okay. Right on, Steve. These are good reasons. So we do. We have a call. Okay. Hello? Is our caller there?
No caller.
Okay.
They just had a question.
Just a question.
Right on. So I don't have a name attached with this, but we did get our first call. And Steve, they're wondering if you have thoughts on a waste to energy burner for economic development and how that will go over in the town.
So I think that's referring to a plasma burner, is my guess. And that there's been some discussion many years ago, and then my understanding, although I didn't get a chance to get down in here, that DJ McConaughey was talking about this again as a possibility. It's, you know, if the technology is there and you're able to do it, it would be great. That if we are able to burn waste and create steam and energy and heat source, there's all kinds of wonderful things that could be done from that. I know on the little bit that I researched about this that you need a fairly steady stream of waste, and you need a steady stream. It helps to have a pulp waste as well, because that keeps the burner burning, because it burns all the time. It's not something you fire up. You're burning it all the time. And so the technology may have changed from years ago when this was first proposed, I believe, with Valerie McCandless, when Valerie McCandless was here and was mayor. I believe it was proposed. Unfortunately, you know, at this point, we'd have to really take a good look even at where we'd house it, how much, what the waste stream in our area is looking mm-hmm. like, what it would cost us to barge and transport and process and, you know, man a facility. And, you know, the energy that is produced from that, it's not just as easy as dumping it back into the grid. We have power sales agreements that we can't just produce our own energy. A part of our power sales agreement is that we'll buy all of our needs out of the projects, our hydro projects.
You're saying so, the SEPA project.
The SEPA
project. Southeast Alaska Power Agency projects.
So there's a lot of factors. It doesn't mean it can't be done, and it doesn't mean it's not a good idea, But we're talking about probably if we were serious about it, we'd have to hire a consulting firm that would go through and do all of the research, because you're going to put out a lot of money to bring this online, and you'd better have the waste to keep it up and going. Mm-hmm. And then just even some place to house the darn thing, because the old mill property would have been ideal, but that's actually been subdivided and it's being sold as small lots. So there's some complicating factors there.
Yeah. Yeah, the city is out of those negotiations. So if the city was to do that project, it would not be there.
It would not be there.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you to our caller. And you know what? We're going to go to a break real quick. But please continue with the calls. We'll be back in 30 seconds. The number is 874-2345. Okay, the time is 1:17. We are back with Mayor Steve Prasanka. So we were talking about ferries. Are there any state issues that are on your mind?
Yes. Yeah, we've got a few. So a major one for us is the closing of our fish and game office. This is just unacceptable. And I've met with both of our representatives, Dan Ortiz, Representative Ortiz, and Senator Stedman's office when I was just up on the call-in to go up for the ferries, and I met with both of them. It's definitely on the radar. The city is drafting a letter to go through to both offices and address this. This is unacceptable on so many levels, but we have just seen an out-shipment of our state services over the years, starting years ago with our social worker for DFYS. And that was housed over in Petersburg. And then they downsized the Petersburg office to the point that they had one worker there handling basically Wrangell, Petersburg, and Cake, and then also picking up cases out of Juneau and Sitka for a total of over 60 cases, with the state mandate stating that 13 cases per worker is optimal. So she's just overwhelmed. And they've added back a part-time administration position, I believe, over there to help her out. But we need our own social worker here. And then we've seen the health nurse, that's been regionalized over to Petersburg. We've seen our magistrate regionalized over to Petersburg. And now, of course, if we have the office regionalized over to Petersburg, it's just unacceptable. Community of Petersburg. And it's not Petersburg's fault. It's the state looking to save money. Now, there's a bill being put forward to regionalize school districts. So I can only assume that they're going to want to regionalize our school district over to Petersburg. And we just have to say, no, that's unacceptable. We're an individual.
Yeah, definitely. So, and I do want to, sort of make a caveat with that bill that you're talking about that was introduced that would regionalize. I think it was making the 54 districts, reducing them down to 18,
yeah.
Which, sounds pretty intense. But I do think when I talk to my colleagues, they say right now there's no need for alarm. In that the person that introduced that maybe does not have the political weight that they would need for this. And it is going to Jonathan Christ Tompkins. It's going to his committee, and he seems like the guy that would not want to push that out of his committee, would not want to support that.
I've been here long enough that things that I didn't think were going to happen all of a sudden happened. I never would have thought they would pull our magistrate out of our area, and they did. So I think it's not bad for us to make some noise about this early on, and we're certainly going to be watching it closely. But there's a lot of small school districts up north that have administrative costs, but you know, that we get caught up in the aftermath. Years ago, they looked at regionalizing Medicaid numbers. I don't know if people knew this, but they would have taken our mental health facility and regionalized it to Ketchikan or Petersburg. So they would have taken away the Medicaid number so you couldn't bill any longer in Wrangell. So it would have meant we'd become a satellite, and we managed to fight that off too. There's always a push to save money. So yeah, we just want to stay on it. But I agree.
Yeah.
Hopefully this stuff gets killed in committee. That's where you hope, but you never know.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I think, you know, the point that you're making about Fish and Game is something that the commissioner, you know, did not address in any way. You know, the commissioner said this is cost savings and it is not going to in any way impact the management of fish because we're not losing a biologist. No, but the point you're making is, you know, it's the impact to this community.
Well, he said you can do all the services that you're going to lose online. Well, if that's the case, then close all the offices and just leave biologists and close every office if you can do it online. It's just not the case. Mm-hmm. You know, if you lose a tag for your crab pot and you want to go down and swear an affidavit saying that it's lost and you want a new tag so you can keep fishing, that's not going to happen anymore. Now you're going to have to wait in the mail or however it gets sent to you. And that's lost days for a fisherman. So that's not good. Sealing bears and sealing elk and all that stuff that they have to do, which I don't know much about, but I know it's important to have a person here that can do that. We already have a satellite office. This is the ridiculous thing. We don't have a full office even. Petersburg has a full office. Mm-hmm. So it's just a satellite office. What I recommended is that I know the lease is coming due, if they want to take and combine, why not combine the office down with the health nurse office? She's hardly here anymore. Combine the office down there, save some money for the state on the lease, but let's leave some folks in place.
Right on. Cool. Thank you, Steve. And before we get off of state issues, you know, you told me yesterday that the Governor Dunleavy is supposed to be in town next week. What can you tell me about that?
So we just received word that we'd heard sort of rumblings, but we just received word out of the governor's office that he is coming, and he's coming to town February 4th. And we are still just bashing out all of the details, and we have a very loose schedule starting to develop. But I'm really excited he's coming. This is fantastic news for Wrangell. And our governor has not always gotten out and met folks in their communities. And so this is him trying to do that. And so I want us to put our best foot forward and welcome the governor and be able to show him a little bit about our lives here in Wrangell and express some of our concerns and hear some of his plans. And so to that end, there is going to be a community meeting that night, and we believe it will be starting around 5 or 5:30. And then he's going to meet with the assembly and I believe some school district personnel. The tribe will have an opportunity to speak directly with the governor. And we're hopeful that we'll be able to get him a quick tour of the new hospital site so he can see the exciting things that are going on in the community. And I think he's going to meet with the Chamber of Commerce as well. So I'm looking forward to it, and I'm very positive about this. I think this is a really good thing for us to be able to meet face to face with the governor.
Right on. And so my understanding is he approached the city and other folks in the city. It's not that you all reached out to him and said, please come here.
No, this was out of his office. Yeah. And he's going to Petersburg. Mm-hmm. We'd caught wind that, that his security detail had reached out to the police department to do some discussions with them. And then they followed up a little while later with us. So no, we're very pleased to have been chosen for a visit and an opportunity to sit down with the governor and hear his plans for the state and to express things that we like that are happening at a state level and things that we would like to see improved.
Yeah. Anything else you want to say as far as what you would tell him?
You know, I'm hoping that I can listen a bit to to hear what his ideas and directions are. Because many times, you know, we did have the State of the State last night, but many times I hear what other people say that he's saying, and then I'm not sure exactly if that's the plans or intentions. And, you know, the state is in financial trouble, and we have to come up with solutions, and there's a bunch of ways to reach that. So hopefully I'll listen a lot, and I'd like to hear what other people's concerns are, and then maybe we can sort of come up with some solutions, because everybody has problems. I'm just hoping that we can find some ideas that would help the governor to meet our needs.
Okay. Right on, right on. And when should the city have more details on that?
We have another meeting scheduled with his office this afternoon, and I'm hoping that Kim Lane, our clerk, will be able to do a press release out on it. You know, I really did just find out yesterday morning. Mm-hmm. And so we did some initial calling yesterday afternoon and a little bit of follow-up this morning. So there's some details to be wrapped up, and we'll get them out to everybody as soon as possible. But we are planning to have a community meeting where the community can come out and hear the governor and ask questions.
Right on. Okay. This sounds good. Let's go to another short break, and then we will resume our conversation. So we're going to be getting into the last part of this show. So I do encourage people, now is the time to call. That number is 874-2345. Hello, everybody. The time is 1:30. We have Mayor Steve Prasunka in the studio. We've been talking a lot about state issues and how they impact our community. Let's head right into some of the issues that the city is trying to resolve. And there's just a lot of them, honestly. But Steve, I mean, really, what's the one challenge that is really coming to mind and is apparent to you, you know, right now?
Well, I think that the main challenge that the city's facing is we have a series of buildings that are aging, and we have maintenance issues on those buildings, deferred maintenance, and I'm not blaming anybody. It's sometimes just lack of funds to do the things that we needed to do. But now we're paying the piper on a lot of this, and so we have the powerhouse. Our generator powerhouse was made with, I guess, beach sand, and that beach sand is corrosive, and it's over 100 years old to start with, but it's literally flaking off and falling down. So we're going to have to deal with that. And our public safety building, we are dealing with all kinds of issues there right now. We know some of them we knew about, and we've had several sprinkler issues over the last little bit, and sprinkler alarms and flooding. And as they tear into the building to look at those issues, they're finding more issues.
You've had flooding there?
Well, yeah, the sprinkler broke on the dry system, I guess it is, and that triggered it off. And so those are in spaces where they're kind of internal spaces, and then they fired off and shot water everywhere. So we had the EMS or the fire department crew was up there the other night helping to mop up and clean up, and then the maintenance crew has been working nonstop to get it cleaned up and set up for the court system. But you know, we're finding issues as we go along there. So that building is probably going to become a larger priority as we move forward. But it's the water treatment system is being replaced, but then we have the delivery infrastructure and the ability to capture the water, and the diverts water there, and water, we have to look at meters eventually, because we see a spike when it gets cold. People turn on their faucets and we run through water. So the generators, we're going to have to look at. There's just a ton of infrastructure issues. And a small community like ours, we just can't tax people to meet all these needs. We have to find grants and creative ways of getting stuff done. And that's our, right now, in my mind, that is our primary concern, is these infrastructure and building issues.
Yeah. Yeah, good point, Steve. And like you said, I mean, water is an issue that's really on our mind. But that is very much tied into this deferred maintenance for the, and Lisa Von Bargen, the city manager, I mean, she has said this number several times. You know, it's a rough estimate in her mind, but she said it many times. She, I mean, it could be a quarter of a billion, you know, that she easily said, if you really wanted to dish the money out and fix everything, it's up at that level.
Well, and just so you know, this deferred maintenance issue is not just a Wrangell issue. It's across the state, including the state's buildings. They are now having major issues with their buildings because of deferred maintenance. Everybody has kicked the can down the road. Well, unfortunately, we're there. It's time we have to start dealing with them. And, you know, we managed to deal with the hospital in a very positive way in terms of that situation in the old hospital. And but now we need to find creative ways to move on with the other buildings.
Yeah. You know, as far as the public safety building goes, you know, the city has put out grants. They were denied one grant. They're in the process of hearing back on one grant, is my understanding. I mean, there's been talks about, is this a building that we want to renovate, or is this a building that we want to get rid of and start fresh with?
Well, we're going to be having that discussion partially tonight at the assembly meeting, but there is a tipping point where you have a building that's 30 plus years old that has major mechanical issues and potentially black mold issues that you're going to have to remediate, which just add to the costs of everything. And the court system has kind of put us on notice, saying that they think the building's timing out, and we know that there's just issues. And so at some point, we that's going to be a question that we have to raise, because you can put out a ton of money in renovations and still have structural issues down the road. So the question is it better to potentially look at doing a new facility somewhere else and then just tearing it down and calling it good? So I hate to see that. It seems so wasteful to me, but it just comes down to what makes the most sense financially.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, this is a really tough thing to tackle. Like you said, you can't just tax a population of 2,500 people and solve the issue that way. I mean, how's it going to get fixed? What are the ways that you all are thinking about resolving these issues?
Well, if there's only so many options to a community like ours, but I believe that there's some infrastructure funding that's going to come down federally, and it's being talked about, and potentially earmarks may be brought back in. And that would be, if we have shovel-ready projects ready to go on the shelf that have been engineered, we can send those in and see if we can't find some federal funding. There may be some grants available federally for fire departments, not for police departments, courthouses, DMV, but potentially for fire departments. So that would possibly take care of that. Of course, there'd be some matching funds that would have to go along with it. But my understanding is we can start to pursue and look at those opportunities as well. So then the other thing you can do is bonding further for these structures. And we have to have a public safety building. We have a source of revenue with the court system here in Alaska. And it would be a shame to have that go away.
Yeah. Yeah, and it seems like the staff is really diligent about, you know, finding what could be potential federal funding, state funding. But you did mention the hospital and how that was this sort of interesting way of, you know, of a problem building becoming something really cool for the city by involving search. Is anything like that on the table? Is there any option of privatizing, getting the private sector involved with these buildings. Is that anything that you were talking about?
Well, you can, I mean, I guess one option is you could see if there's a private sector individual that wants to, excuse me, build buildings and lease them to the city. That's a possibility, but I don't even know, you know, I don't know the legalities of that with public safety buildings, but other cities lease buildings from people. So from a private sector standpoint, I guess there is. As far as...
Nothing's on the table.
No,
nothing
there's
is...
nobody coming forward and saying, but, you know, private-public partnership is huge. And in many ways, that's what the Boatyard is. That's a private-public partnership where we provided a structure and a travel lift and all this business grew up around it and we leased the properties to people. So that's kind of my favorite structure on things. And if we can, we definitely will look at it.
Right on. Okay. Before you go, Steve, you know, I think living in Wrangell is like, it's pretty hard and it's largely hard because we're in a remote space. Having so few people means it can be hard for, you know, businesses to get their business off the ground. I mean, what is it like being the mayor of this tiny, tiny town? You know, collectively, just, I mean, what are the issues that you face you know, the mayor of Anchorage doesn't?
Well, there's really no issues. I mean, you from time to time, everybody on the assembly will have somebody angry at them because you take a position that is not in line with their position. And you may be questioning purchases that the city wants to make that somebody may believe is crucial to their job or whatever it might be. Mm-hmm. And so you'll have people that are angry at you for those sort of things. But, you know, I really don't worry too much about that sort of thing. I'm very honored to be able to be the mayor of our town. And I think, for the most part, I really enjoy talking with people, and I really enjoy solving problems for folks. When somebody comes up and says, hey, can you do something about this? Could you ask about this for me? And I really enjoy that. But the greatest enjoyment I have being the mayor is when we can have young people from our school system come down and be recognized at the assembly. And that is by far my most favorite thing that we do. So having the wrestling team in there the other night just makes me grin from ear to ear. We had a young fellow who did a project, Hank Voltz, did a wonderful project on the Shoemaker parking lot, and he was able to come down and present it to us. And that just makes me so pleased to see young people involved in such positive things. So there is very little downside to it. I wish we had more money and we could just spend money and make everything better, but we don't have that. And I just think we all need to keep looking for opportunities and making Wrangell a great town.
Okay. Right on. Steve, thank you so much for coming
in
today.
Jean. Appreciate it.
Mm-hmm. The time is 1:42. We have had your mayor, Steve Prasunka, in the studio. And as always, we will be back next week with another guest. See you then. It's a hard time we're waiting back. It's a hard time we're waiting back.